Hey guys, how you doing? It's Coach Treggs here, the founder of 30 Plus Men's Fitness, and I hope you're all doing great. We are continuing in the vein of form that we started 2017 by bringing you only the best in our 30 Plus Men's Fitness podcast. I made a promise to you guys at the end of 2016 to bring you two podcasts a month and also do one Facebook Live workout a week. And I'll tell you what, it's hard to commit to, and I'm glad I made it because it makes me pull my finger out my bum and it makes me connect with a lot of my peers. And, you know, I love doing these podcast guides because it's continued professional development for me. If I can get to talk to my peers, get some nuggets from them for me personally to pass on to my clients and then pass down to you guys, then it's a win-win situation. So guys, really excited about my guest today. First off, before I introduce him, I'm going to tell you I found him. Recently did a wonderful podcast with Jamie Alderton, who's become a good friend of mine. And on the back of that, following Jamie, I saw he was hanging out with this guy at a seminar over in Ireland. So I thought, right, I'm going to follow this guy. Clicked onto his YouTube, clicked onto his Facebook, and a whole new world opened up for me, okay? So this guy is a little bit of a niche master. I'm going to let him tell you what that's all about. But he has been around for a good while. I don't know why I didn't come across him before. He's got an amazing following. He's just recently written a book. I am sat with, virtually, because he's in Ireland and I'm in South Wales, I'm sat with Phil Graham. Phil, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. How are you, buddy?
I'm great, buddy. Thank you very much for having me on, Mark.
Brilliant stuff. So, Phil, you've recently released a book all about fitness, muscle, fat loss for diabetics, okay? So when I saw that, you know, working with the demographic I work with, busy over 30s, 40s, 50s men, some of them probably on the verge of diabetes, right? I thought, I've got to get this guy on. This guy is going to provide massive value for our niche and hopefully help save and change a few lives in the process. So Phil, tell us a little bit about how you got into becoming a sort of a niche specialist with diabetes, but not just that. Tell us about you. Tell us where you're based. Tell us about your history in the fitness industry and where it all began, buddy. Okay, I'm going to go quiet and it's over to you, my friend.
No worries. Thank you, Mark. So basically, it rolls back to around about 15, 16 years of age. And my lifestyle at the time was pretty unhealthy, you could say that. I was inactive, I was overeating, I was playing too many video games, I was a typical adolescent. And it wasn't until I was going to school one day, and I've talked about this on a lot of podcasts and a lot of other books and magazines that I've featured in, I was going to school one day and I noticed that my eyesight was remarkably different. And I noticed that the number plates on cars were very, very blurry and very hard to read. Now, as a human being, we tend to pick up on things that are outside of our norm, that break our typical daily patterns. And this was a marked change. Wow. And I was sitting on the bus one day and I was looking at the window going, there's something wrong with my eyes. And as time went on, my lifestyle at the time, again, was, again, very unhealthy in terms of overconsumption of calories and lack of activity. My eyesight got progressively worse, and I noticed that I began to actually lose weight, and I was going to the toilet a lot. I was getting out of class a lot to go to the toilet. Now, bear in mind, I was 15, 16 years of age, and it was the kind of thing that gets parked to the back of your mind. So I just thought it must have been a cold, it must have been a flu or whatever. I said to my mum about it, and she said the same thing. We left in another week. Things got worse. Then we went to the doctor, and long story short, I was diagnosed with diabetes. So automatically overnight, I had to make a change to my lifestyle. I had to make a change to my ways and means about how I saw life and how I approached it. And the first thing that I was brought into was a room, basically, which was in a diabetes education unit. And I was able to see posters on the wall of all these side effects and complications of diabetes. And it was very scary. I was seeing amputations of limbs. I was seeing people going blind. I was seeing kidney problems, all these major issues that was happening with people with uncontrolled diabetes. So basically, at that particular point, I had to make a controlled choice to commit the rest of my life to educating myself on nutrition, becoming more active and pursuing a better quality lifestyle, because that was the main mode of treatment for diabetes. Now, I was diagnosed with type 1.
Type 1
diabetes is completely different to the likes of type 2 and all the other forms of diabetes, but we'll touch on each of those throughout the course of the podcast. But type 1 diabetes results from your pancreas, which is an organ, failing to produce the hormone insulin. And if you guys can imagine insulin, I'm sure you've heard about it in many of your different magazines, articles, videos. People talk about insulin and carbohydrates a lot. Insulin basically organizes the metabolic, or how could I put it, nutritional traffic that enters your body from food and puts it into cells. So it facilitates fat gain, it facilitates muscle gain, it facilitates recovery, it facilitates growth. It does a lot of different things. And what happens is, with diabetes, is there's a marked reduction in insulin production, or the body's ability to utilize insulin effectively. So in type 1, we have a complete cessation in insulin production from the pancreas, whereas in type 2, we have defective insulin signaling, whereas the body doesn't really use it as effectively or as well as it should. And what tends to happen is we get a buildup of all this metabolic traffic in the bloodstream, particularly glucose. We then see other issues, for example, like increased protein breakdown, reduced protein synthesis. So there are a lot of metabolic consequences of poorly controlled diabetes. So basically what we need to look at from a treatment perspective is, in type 1, it's typically medication and lifestyle. In type 2, it's generally lifestyle, but there is also the need for medication in certain cases. Now, a lot of the people that are going to be listening to this show are going to know someone with diabetes. Some of you may have it. The majority of you that are listening to this that are trying to make a change in your lifestyle will be type 2 diabetic, whether that's a result of you being overweight. And as a result of that, many of you will also be, a smaller proportion, sorry, will be type 1. And that type 1, again, needs to be managed with medication and lifestyle together. Now, type 2, depending on what stage you're at, is typically reversible in the sense that you can control it largely with lifestyle. And a lot of you guys listening to this show have made a marked effort and controlled choice to go after improving the quality of your life through fitness, through exercise, physical activity, and eating better. And that is one of the best modes of treatment that you can have for type 2. If you're not going to respect your lifestyle, if you're not going to make a controlled choice with your physical activity and your diet, you are going to regress your diabetes and develop that into full-blown insulin-dependent diabetes, which is again what I have. But again, the conditions are caused by various different means. Type 1 is, again, a lot of the contributing factors are still in discussion and up for debate, but it's largely thought to be genetic and triggered by some form of autoimmunity, which is basically whenever the body begins to attack its own cells. And again, a lot of that can be genetic, a lot of that can be triggered by the environment. Lifestyle in the sense of type 1 diabetes, as in overeating and being overweight and stuff like that, they don't help the condition, but they're not thought to meant to be the main contributing factors. Whereas with type 2, somebody who's overweight, stresses too much, doesn't get enough sleep, doesn't exercise enough, has the potential to cause problems with the insulin signaling. Due to the excess levels of body fat, and also the fact that they are chronically consuming too many calories. And as a result of that, the pancreas is having to work extra hard to pump out insulin to accommodate that. We can get into the science of it throughout the podcast, but generally speaking, the majority of people listening to this podcast will be type 2 diabetic. A small proportion will be type 1. So I want to talk about the role of exercise and healthy eating and fitness in controlling diabetes. And I will move between the two throughout the whole podcast. So again, I'll make it very context specific. But individuals with type 2, and I'll start with type 2 because it's the most popular. Individuals with type 2 realize that diabetes is becoming more and more of a global problem nowadays. And the reason for that is because of the increased use of technology, the reduction in workplace mechanization. So for example, a very clear example of this is when you walk into the local supermarket and you see a self-service checkout. So you walk up to it, you scan your own goods, and you put them away. Now, if we would have had a member of staff at a checkout who would have had to manually scan everything through, put them into bags for you, take your money, say goodbye. Think of the energy involved in one transaction. Now, you think of the energy involved in multiple transactions from a 9-to-5 shift.
Yep.
That's a significant expenditure of energy. Now, whenever we replace that individual with an automatic machine, that automatically takes out that calorie expenditure for the day for a potential individual. Now, if you can imagine, this is, again, a very broad example, but if you can imagine that across the scale in the world with improvements in cardless technology, blah, 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 we can see that there's a marked reduction in the ability for humans to interact and actually work. So on top of that, we also see nowadays an increased availability of ready-made meals. So for example, it's very easy to walk into Marks and Spencer's, Tesco's, etc., and basically come out with a meal that can be prepared in 2 minutes. Now, if we were to fast track back to 50, 60 years ago, and for example, we were to buy a meal, we would have had to go to multiple different shops, maybe 1 or 2 miles apart. We would have had to peel the carrots, we would have had to peel the potatoes, and we would have had to prepare it individually. We also would have had to clean up the crockery, we also would have had to clean up the table. Whereas nowadays, the meal comes ready made, microwave, ping, 2 minutes, take the packaging off, fork is already in it, and we can consume it. We also need to realize that confectionery and all these other high calorific goods are much more available, as well as the likes of vegetable oil, the likes of soft drinks, and all of these kinds of things that maybe weren't available back 50, 60, 70 years ago. And if we look back, we can see that the incidence of type 2 diabetes and obesity were much lower.
Right.
So we can see everything nowadays has drifted towards convenience, high calorie food, a reduction in physical activity, and all of these things. So they are not in any way, shape, or form fueling the health of our nation.
Sure.
So we need to be mindful to put in a number of key steps that are going to intervene with the onset or promotion of diabetes. So let's look at a couple of the key factors. Well, we know that physical activity is a massive factor in contributing to energy expenditure. And we can do very simple things like start conducting weight training, start conducting more physical activity throughout the day, and use things like a Fitbit or some kind of pedometer to track and create habits and create a benchmark. So for example, in somebody who's never weight trained before, never exercised before, I give you a Fitbit, and I talk about this in my book, about setting a target goal of, say, 8,000, 10,000. If you can manually look at that every day and try to meet that, your behaviors are going to change in favor of trying to be more active, and being more active is going to expend energy. Expending energy is, in effect, going to help keep you leaner and also sensitize your muscle tissue to using up fuel better. Now, if you can understand from the perspective of somebody who's inactive and is constantly in a state of storage, that's whenever we can see problems with excess storage above and beyond what the body needs. So we need to be really, really mindful of being active and controlling our energy balance. The same thing goes with food now. We can track our food. We can track the amount of nutrition that we take in very easily with all these digital apps that weren't available 10, 50 years ago. Okay, and we can look at a set amount of calories that we need to maintain our weight. We can look at a set amount of calories that we need to decrease our weight, and we can monitor that over time. So it's fairly easy now to stay in tune with what we actually need to promote health. Yeah. Now, whenever it comes to exercise, the best form of exercise for people with diabetes is weight resistance training. And the reason for that is muscle tissue serves as a sink for glucose. It basically stores glucose as glycogen, and also the weight training, the contractions of the muscle fiber increase what we call the translocation or the movement of a particular transporter called GLUT4 to the surface of the muscle tissue.
Wow.
And what that basically does is it facilitates the delivery of glucose out of the bloodstream and into the muscle cells for use as energy or storage independently without insulin. Now, this is in type 2s. So we can see that increasing muscle size will, one, not only increase physical strength and confidence and body appearance, but it will also increase the engine size that you have. So if we look at two cars, if I take a Volkswagen Polo, I have a 1 liter one of the lights, and I have a 5 liter sitting beside it. The 5 liter is going to burn off more fuel sitting at the light stationary before it takes off. It's also going to burn off more fuel whenever it's moving. So think of weight training as building your metabolic capacity or your ability to burn more fuel.
Yeah.
So weight training for anyone with diabetes, type 1, type 2, is a great asset. And I'll talk about type 1 now. Type 1, there is no control of glucose in the body whatsoever. Type 1 still do have a marginal bit of control because insulin is still produced. It just may not do its job as effectively. Whereas in type 1, there is no insulin produced. And the problem with having no insulin is the fact that it can dip and it can rise. The body creates its own glucose via the process of gluconeogenesis. It creates it from fatty acids, it creates it from lactic acid, it creates it from amino acids, fatty acids. And it will create glucose in times of starvation, and it will create glucose in times of stress. So it will pump out glucose from main storage sites. One of those is the liver. And the liver is involved in the production of glucose from non-carbohydrate sources, as I've already discussed. So if I produce no insulin, as I'm a type 1 diabetic, my body will sense that I'm in a state of starvation. As a result of that, it will create glucose from non-carbohydrate sources, store it in the liver, and pump it out when it's needed, when fasting, when stressed. Now, if I'm type 1 diabetic and I don't produce insulin, there's no brakes on the liver. There's no brakes on what can be produced. And if I'm constantly producing glucose and it's going into my system and it's increasing my blood glucose, then what's going to happen is I'm going to receive a hyperglycemia.
Yeah.
Bear in mind, hyperglycemia, hyper is too much glucose in the bloodstream. Hypoglycemia is too little blood glucose in the system whenever it's outside physiological range. So homeostasis is keeping blood glucose controlled, tightly regulated, and that's what a normal, healthy person will do. In type 1, that will not be the case. In type 2, it will not be the case also, but type 1 is more extreme.
Sure.
So what we tend to find is with activities like high-intensity cardio, high-intensity interval training, weight training, all of those things, they are, in a sense, stressful activities.
Sure.
And those stressful activities will increase the production of stress hormones, notably adrenaline and other corticotropins, which is what we term them, and they stimulate the production of glucose in the liver, which is then derived into the bloodstream. And if you're type 1 diabetic and you don't produce any insulin, what tends to happen is, as a result of that, your blood glucose will drive up. And whenever we look at the process of building muscle with type 1 diabetes, we can see that type 1 diabetes is a very catabolic condition. So whenever the body is not able to utilize glucose, whenever the body is not able to utilize it effectively, what tends to happen is we see increased breakdown of all the body's systems. We see an increased breakdown of fat. We see an increased breakdown of muscle protein. We see increased glycation. We see increased oxidative stress. We see a lot of stuff go wrong with health. So if you can think of glucose not being able to leave the bloodstream, as in not being able to leave it and enter the cells, what we tend to happen is it tends to build up. And it's like almost sludge flowing through a very, very fine system of pipes. And what can happen is it can get clogged up. It can cause a lot of issues with fuel delivery. And this is where we see a reduction in diabetic training performance. And we also see a reduction in the capacity for a diabetic to increase muscle mass because fuel isn't being delivered. So it's very, very, very important that we look at a diabetic's management in terms of what they actually control, what they actually consume, how they actually participate in activity, because all of these things will influence how blood glucose is managed. And I always used to have individuals that would say to me that, oh, well, you're diabetic. The fact that you're diabetic makes it much easier for you to build muscle tissue. And people would have said this purely because they associated taking exogenous insulin as a bodybuilder for recreational purposes. But the reality is there was no glucose, or sorry, no insulin produced in my body. So my body was in a highly catabolic state.
Yeah, yeah.
So the myth of taking exogenous insulin as a diabetic and it increasing muscle performance and muscle mass is completely unfounded, because there's so many different aspects there that you need to consider whenever you're outside of range. And if you look at a diabetic's lifespan, they are going to be much more likely to be outside of blood glucose range compared to that of a normal individual.
Okay.
And as a result of that, they are going to be at the potential for reduced performance, increased fatigue, lower work capacity. All of those things are going to come into play.
Sure.
So it's very important that you realize that.
So Phil, I just want to stop you there. It's brilliant content so far. I want to go back to when you were diagnosed with the type 1. right? So you're 16 years old. Had you ever lifted weights or anything like that, or you were just playing your games and just eating junk, etc., like you said?
I never lifted weights. I never partaked in any physical activity whatsoever.
Okay.
I was very inactive, and as a result of that, you can imagine my ability to burn off the fuel that I was taking in was not there. So my capacity to store fat and become obese was much greater. And the fact that obesity and excess fat storage, the body doesn't really like that too much. And as a result, there's a lot of conflicting hormonal messages going on, a lot of underlying inflammation, low-grade inflammation. And again, on top of that, we look at many of the individuals maybe listening to this podcast, they're not happy with their body shape, and they're constantly going around feeling down and constantly feeling like a brain fog is there.
Yeah.
But again, you know, that in conjunction with the actual physiological standpoint of having too much body fat is not a healthy environment for the body. And then when we look at the foods that we put into our bodies nowadays, we look at the actual environment that we are in, it is not the most conducive towards health.
Sure. One thing I want to go back to is you were talking about how we as humans now, everything is designed for us so that we have to be, we're almost inactive. Like you said, you know, the checkouts at the supermarket and preparing a meal is so much easier. And it goes back to something that I've been talking about lately, is which is the NEAT, the non-activity, the non-exercise activity thermogenesis. So I spoke about it with Jamie. I've been talking a lot about it in my podcast. You mentioned a Fitbit. I'm wearing one here. For me, that's really changed things. And you're absolutely right. I mean, some people's NEAT is going to be so much lower these days because they don't have to. They don't have to work as hard to, like you said, to go and get that meal, to prepare that meal, et cetera, et cetera. So I was actually listening to a podcast recently with Lyle McDonald, and he was talking about there's studies been shown of certain populations of some ladies' NEAT is that much higher in certain populations of the world, because they're basically like slaves to their husbands. They're literally doing everything, the cooking, the cleaning, the running to the store, they're doing everything. And I think it's really important to get this message across to people at a very basic level, is you've got to get moving, because people don't realize how inactive they are, do they, Phil?
No, people don't. I mean, you know, you take the typical lorry driver or typical office worker that's sitting about all day long, and you see that they are just simply sitting and putting food into their bodies left, right, and center, and there is no way or means to actually burn that off.
Yep.
And what happens is the body really doesn't like that, and an excess storage of calories and nutrients does not go down too well. There's a host of different metabolic properties that happen whenever somebody is carrying excess body fat. And, you know, as I said, low-grade inflammation, low self-esteem, even we could go psychological, we could go physiological. There's a host of things going on there. And, you know, you look at the foods that an individual is maybe consuming, and you see that they are very high calorie, low volume foods that are very easily consumed and that don't really affect appetite. So what we tend to see is very much overconsumption. And as a result of that, obesity comes, fat gain comes. And I think it's very important to be mindful that an individual looks at the quality of food that they consume. And I think that nowadays we see so much of a confused message with a lot of fitness individuals following the If It Fits Your Macro style approach and trying to promote the consumption of these very low volume but high calorie foods. And again, somebody seeing that they don't really understand the whole message behind that. And as a result of that, that's leading individuals into consuming these type of If It Fits Your Macros food without respecting the grand context of somebody who's maybe been lean all their life and buying into that. So there's no real recollection of how that individual can control that consumption, and they're left not understanding, how could I put it, not understanding how different volumes of food will affect their appetite and their psychology. If you're coming from years and years of eating, putting one hand in the cookie jar and taking one is not really going to happen. You know, the context of looking at all of this is very, very, very important. Yeah. Does that make sense?
This is really interesting. I mean, we're slightly going off tangent, but I think it's a fantastic point you make. I mean, when I'm working with clients now, you can't take a kind of one size fits all, because if you're working with an individual that has had eating issues and they say, oh, I really want some chocolate, I really want some, you say, well, you have to make them understand, look, if everything else is in order, you're doing your steps, you're lifting weights, you're drinking water, your sleep is good, you know, and you're eating a decent amount of protein and vegetables, and you have a bar of chocolate, that's not going to break your diet, or you know. And a lot of people seem to think you've got to be careful of trigger foods. So if you give a client, you say, yeah, have a bar of chocolate, it's like you said, can you just put your hand in the cookie jar and have one cookie, or is then that a trigger and your brain goes, do you know what I mean? So it's
100%, you know, you've maybe been eating in a particular way for a long period of time. That is the reason why you have implications with your body composition.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, I'm all for including flexible dieting within your eating strategy, but whenever you look at, you know, all the hormonal aspects that come into effect whenever somebody has had an eating issue for a prolonged period of time, there are going to be implications there for relying on that types of food. And, you know, simply working off a calorie balance and filling the majority of that diet up with low calorie foods that are not going to fill you up is a big, big implication. And, you know, it's almost as if nowadays you see so many fitness individuals promoting the consumption of high calorie junk foods as almost like it's a badge of honor. And it's almost like the reverse of obesity. You know, and that can prove very confusing for somebody who doesn't understand nutrition, somebody who isn't a complete fitness fanatic but wants to change their body and is not taking into account the sheer amount of training volume that an individual is doing, the fact that they may be taking pharmaceutical enhancement, the fact that they may be getting guided by an expert coach. You know, there's a lot of things to consider there, and I think that putting out that message is going to be very conflicting with the underlying beliefs of what fat loss typically entails. But don't get me wrong, I'm very much for including freedom of food choice within a calorific guideline. And a couple of phrases that I use throughout my book, you know, there's no such thing as a bad food. It boils down to dose and frequency. So you consider that. That's a very, very strong filter.
That's brilliant. You know, say that again, Phil. Say that again. That's gold.
So there is no such thing as a bad food. It boils down to dose and frequency.
There you go, guys. There's your golden nugget right there. Absolute gold dust. Cheers.
Let me put this into context. If I was to wake up in the morning and have a Mars bar, typically we would have been led to believe that a Mars bar is a bad food, that we're going to get fat. Now, a Mars bar, upon last recollection, is around about 220 calories or so. If I need a set amount of calories to maintain my physiological functioning, i.e. the running of my liver, my organs, my digestive system, the ability for me to think, the ability for me to get up and work throughout the day, to be able to conduct stuff, that costs me energy. So let's say on average, the average meal maintains at around about 2,000 calories. If I wake up in the morning and I consume 220 calorie Mars bar, but my perceptions and beliefs have told me that, okay, that's going to make you gain fat. Well, the reality is I still have another good 1,700 calories left to consume before I even meet my maintenance level.
Yes.
Never mind the fact that that Mars bar is going to cost me calories to digest. So every food that you eat, guys, whether that's 200 calorie food or a 500 calorie meal, the more food that you eat, the more energy that costs to digest. That's what we call the thermic effect of feeding. So the reality is we need to literally look at the foods that we eat on a day-to-day basis, and we need to look at them in the context of what's actually going on. So if I was to eat 10 Mars bars, 2,200 calories, then dose and frequency is more frequent. And the fact of the matter is, the last time I checked, Mars bars weren't too high in protein and they weren't too high in minerals.
Sure.
And the last time I checked as well, they were very easy to overeat and they didn't feed me.
Yes.
Now, again, that's context. So, you know, fitting foods like that in is perfectly acceptable. But look at what you're doing. Again, another filter, you are what you eat on average.
Yeah.
So if the bulk of your diet is going to be from crappy food in line with your calorie intake, the last time I checked, you're not going to control hunger too well, or you're not going to feel too good.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to, you know, if you have 2,000 calorie allowance and you're going to basically dictate that all to alcohol and burgers, tell me how you feel. Tell me how you perform. Yeah. Tell me what your appetite's like. Tell me, are you getting cravings? So these things need to be considered.
Yeah. I also think what's really interesting there, you were talking about there's no bad food. I think we've all, certainly I have, I've had some issues and stuff in the past where it's like, and I see this with clients, if they, a lot of people are office-based, there's cakes, there's donuts, there's this, there's that, and you'll see people pop up in my online communities and they'll say, oh, I've had a donut, so that's it, my diet's fucked now, so I'll start again on Monday. And it's like you said, well, actually, it's not. It might be the most nutritious food, but your diet. And there's this whole analogy that we sometimes use. Like, if you drop your phone and it's broken, but could be repaired, would you stamp all over it? And it's again, it's this mentality of you're either on the wagon or off the wagon. And look, I've been guilty of it. I'll put my hands up right now on this podcast, Phil. Right, and I think that if you speak to a lot of coaches over the years, they've got into this whole clean eating, and we do promote a cleaner way of eating, but you know, let's just be fair, it's a term, it means healthy eating. But then, whereas if you go off that clean eating track and all of a sudden you've broken your diet, oh, we're fucked now, we'll start again. And it doesn't have to be that way. It's just about understanding that actually you can factor these in, you know, if you understand that you can maybe have one donut, or you know, you just don't have 10. But then that comes down to people's psychology with food as well.
It all depends. You know, you have to realize that good quality, unprocessed food is dealt with easier in the body, in my opinion. And it typically feels better and it's burnt off cleaner. Whereas, you know, the other junk food-based stuff is very rash and very hard to deal with and process. And I can tell you that firsthand from a diabetic perspective.
Sure.
So, for example, the equivalent carbohydrate from a loaf of bread with, you know, jam smeared over it compared to that from a sweet potato or some form of rice is typically harder to manage blood glucose-wise than it is with the good quality food.
Yeah.
So, you know, the same goes for pizza, for example. If I was to have an equivalent amount of calories from pizza compared to equivalent amount of calories from some other form of good quality unprocessed food, when I say unprocessed, minimally processed, I mean, I know for a fact that the pizza will require a lot more insulin to accommodate the glucose and stuff like that in my body. And that's purely down to, again, the food ingredients, the other ingredients that are added, the source of the ingredients, the way it's being processed and milled, all of those kinds of things are going to affect how the food is dealt with in my body.
Yep.
So it's very, very important that you look at the quality of food that you eat. High quality food is typically lower in calories, fills you up, is higher in protein, is higher in fiber, is higher in vitamins and minerals. It tastes okay. It tastes great if you know how to cook it. So cooking skills are absolutely essential for guys that want to improve the quality of their life. And that's a buy-in. You have to remember that. We're all about buy-ins. Fitness and diet should support the quality of your life, not take away from it. And the reality is the majority of meals, the last time I checked, don't know how to cook. So if you don't know how to cook, eating clean is going to be very difficult for you. It's going to be very hard for you. But the reality is go and hire a chef. Go and invest in yourself. Go and pay for a chef's time for 2 hours on a Saturday morning for 4 weeks or something like that and cook up a couple of dishes. Get a chef that is maybe working in a healthy eating restaurant or is very knowledgeable of food, and or even you give him the foods and say, how can I flavor this? Look at the herbs, the spices, the preparation, the combination of ingredients, the combination of foods and different textures. That is a buy-in. If you're doing that and you're enjoying the foods you eat, then you don't feel like you're suffering.
Superb.
Whereas on the other hand, low quality food tastes fucking amazing. It doesn't fill us up.
Yeah.
It's very low in protein and low in minerals and low in fiber. And you know, you have to respect the elements of nutrition whenever it comes to looking at fat loss. And when we talk about diabetic nutrition, there are some certain compromises that need to be made. But generally speaking, we need to be getting enough calories in to support our body weight, our rate of body weight change, enough protein and enough essential fatty acids.
Sure.
We also need some fiber in there for the growth of the microbiome within the gut. And again, certain individuals need to be mindful of the fiber that they take, particularly people with IBS or celiac disease. Again, they need to be mindful. But when it comes to diabetic nutrition, we need to get food in that supports blood glucose management, energy balance, nutrient intakes. So for example, somebody who's got poorly controlled diabetes and the fact that their body's under much more stress, they're going to be under increased nutritional demand and they're going to have different requirements. They're going to have different deficiencies that exist. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So we need to look at replenishing those and putting in as much as possible. Okay. Now, on the aspect of diabetes and nutrition, again, type 1, type 2, I'm sort of painting the two with a broad brush here. We talk a lot about myths and stuff like that in the fitness industry. And we talk about myths, for example, like protein's bad for the kidneys, protein's bad for the liver, et cetera, et cetera. In a normal person without dysfunction in kidney health, that is the case. However, with type 1 diabetes and type 2 diabetes, you're much more likely to have kidney problems.
Right.
You're much more likely to have liver problems if you don't look after your diabetes. So if you have uncontrolled diabetes and haven't been looking after it for a year and suddenly decide to take a health kick and suddenly decide to start eating more protein, there may be implications with that, and you need to check with your healthcare professional about the functioning of your system. And the reality is, whenever we look at the whole aspect of nutrition with diabetics, supplements with diabetics, creatine, for example, is another one that maybe need to be considered. Whenever you weight train, your protein demands increase. Whenever you have diabetes, your protein demands increase, especially if you're uncontrolled, because you're breaking down muscle protein. If you need to lose weight and you're obese, consuming a high protein diet due to the satiety effect or the fact that protein fills us up is going to be very, very, very beneficial. Okay?
Sure.
So there are a lot of pros and cons for having a higher protein intake in people with diabetes, especially if you strength train. And that's an argument that I put across in the book, because if we look at the intakes that are typically recommended, the majority of calories are presumed to come from carbohydrates and fat, with protein being around about 0.8 grams per kilo. But I know for a fact if I'm weight training and I'm wanting to lose weight and I'm wanting to build muscle, I would potentially benefit from a lot more protein than that.
Sure.
So again, these questions need to be put out there. The same thing goes for things like creatine. Again, creatine, again, myth, it's bad for your liver, bad for your kidneys, et cetera, in the healthy population. But what happens if you have one kidney? What happens if you have signs of kidney disease or kidney failure or liver failure? You're going to have to be very mindful of what you consume.
Sure.
So again, it all depends on the context of where the individual is at. But other things as well with diabetes, you know, complications if it's not looked after, we're looking at complete dehydration, electrolyte imbalances. Imbalances are going to have an effect on the ability for a muscle fiber to contract and perform. So we need to maybe look at supplementing with electrolytes much more.
Sure.
We need to look at consuming water. We look at other things such as the complications with the periphery. So, for example, the feet, the hands, the nerves. All of those things are going to be coming into play. And especially with uncontrolled people with diabetes, we tend to find that if they get a cut on the foot or they get an ulceration, that can manifest into a very problematic health condition if it's not looked after, the diabetic control isn't managed. And how do you think that individual is going to perform whenever they're doing weighted carries, squats, sprints, balancing, deadlifting, lifting a load with an ulcer on your foot? There's a lot of implications here. Then we look at progressed diabetes and somebody who's maybe had an amputation because they haven't looked after their condition well enough and they're trying to strength train around that. So there's a lot of different things that need to be considered and we need to look at those individually.
Sure.
But I mean, if there are diabetics that are listening or if there's somebody listening that knows a diabetic, they most likely will. There's a couple of things that I want to just run through that I think are absolutely fundamental. One is surrounding yourself with a really good quality environment that's going to support you. So that means from a professional healthcare setting right through to an everyday member of the public setting slash friends, family, support group. You need to be around people that are proactively going after an improvement in health. Like I say in my book, if you hang around with four people that eat shit, sit about and talk shit, you're going to become the fifth.
I love it, yeah.
So you have to look at how you spend your time. Are you spending your time with people that push you? So I like to surround myself with people that are slightly fitter than me, just as fit as me, and less as fit as me. Now, that's divided into threes. The reason why the bottom group is there is because that reminds me of what I don't want to have and what I'm grateful for what I have. The middle group is to basically interact with the most. There's where I'll get a lot of my ideas from, a lot of my motivation from. And the top group will be those that I aspire to be, that motivate me, that encourage me, that push me. Secondly, as well, measuring. If you aren't measuring, you're just guessing. So looking at measuring blood glucose response throughout the day.
Yep.
Morning, after training, before training, after a certain meal, after a stressful situation.
I'm doing this, yeah.
Notice and observe the patterns. It's about patterns, about reoccurring patterns. When you identify reoccurring patterns with your blood glucose or your appetite or your mood or your mindset or anything like that or your training performance, you're usually clicking onto something. And the beauty with diabetes is nowadays is that they have, for the likes of blood glucose monitoring, CGMs, continuous blood glucose monitoring systems, where you click them onto the arm and they monitor your blood glucose 24 hours a day. I still prick my finger for my blood glucose. I still do that manually. And the reality is I do that once a day now. I'm at a state with my diabetic control that I don't really need to do that. I can go by feel. And why is that? Because I've been taking patterns for years.
Sure.
Been doing 29 now. I've been doing it since I've been 16. Okay, and I can show you my, you know, my books where I was writing stuff down on bits of paper and stuff like that. And I had spreadsheets and a whole go of stuff.
Yes.
So I was able to observe patterns. So monitoring that is very important, and not just in relation to blood glucose, but also for calorie intake, physical activity outside the gym, training frequency, progressive overload, strength increases. All of those things need to be monitored. If something's not moving in the right direction towards your goal, you need to assess it, change.
Okay.
On top of that, rest and recovery and stress management. I can't stress that enough for the guys listening.
Yeah.
And a lot of you guys will be pursuing fitness fitness efforts in a very stressed out way. Fitness will add to your stress and complication as an individual.
Interesting.
I'll break these down. I'll talk about stress management first and personal development. A lot of people pursue fitness as an extrinsic goal, to please others, to appear significant. And the reality is, whenever you chase fitness with that kind of goal or that kind of mission, it becomes like a white rabbit. Every time you run after it, it runs away. And again, this is probably one of the biggest points of the show, but when you chase after something in life, it runs away. And the same goes with fitness. If you want to have the abs and look like the great guy on the beach or whatever, all respect to you, but if that's your main goal, and you don't respect the fact that you're good enough already, and that you have complete and utter control of how you dictate your emotional response to everything in life, you will constantly be chasing after that white rabbit. So it's very important to be grounded in yourself and realize that you have the potential to do anything that you want in your life, whether you have diabetes or not, that you're good enough, that you have the capacity to think that you're good enough or to think that you're not good enough. And a lot of the feelings that you have right now about how you feel about yourself are purely based off little circumstances that occurred throughout your life that may have been over-exaggerated or under-exaggerated, that you have blown out of proportion. And the majority of stuff that you tell yourself on a day-to-day basis of what you need to be is complete and utter bullshit.
Sure.
And it's very important to realize that you need to look at fitness as a longevity tool. You need to look at it as a complementary tool to your life. You don't look at fitness as, I must have this because it's going to get me this reaction from this chick. It's going to get me this reaction whenever I go into the nightclub or whatever. If you're doing that, then you're relying on a very flimsy goal that is in reality not really going to support you in the long run.
Yeah, yeah.
And the thing is with fitness is whenever somebody gets down into shape and they conduct all the behaviors, the calorie restriction, the dieting, the training, how long can I carry this out for? How long can I do this for? If you're thinking like that, you're thinking on the wrong terms. When we look at long-term motivation, we need to build mastery of our subject, mastery of nutrition and training and understanding it. And when the reality is, when you understand a lot about nutrition and training and fitness, it becomes very easy.
Yeah.
it becomes very simple. You know, the saying that in the beginner's mind, there are many options, it's very complicated. In the master's mind, there are very few and it's very simple. That is a great place to be.
Yep.
And that takes a lot of time for you to invest as an individual in both study and experience and mistakes to get there. You also need to realize that fitness is meant to bring you relationships. So the gym is probably one of the most social environments that you can go to nowadays. The amount of friends that you meet that are like-minded, that have similar goals and ambitions. You need to realize that you also have to have a sense of engagement, the ability to push past personal records. Delaying gratification is a big, big thing as well. Okay, you know, when you're trying to ingrain habits about, you know, rewarding yourself after periods of time, you've met set benchmarks, is very, very important. So mindset and personal development in relation to fitness is incredibly important. And, you know, if you're not chasing that, you're going to run into issues.
Sure, sure.
And I think it's very important that you take an aspect or point in your day to develop your mind.
Yes, I'm all for the mindset.
Feed it with information and feed it with knowledge and experience from other people that is going to help you become a better human being. And I'm obsessed with improving the quality of my life, and I'm obsessed with observing what I react to, why I responded in a certain way. I'm obsessed with trying to identify that on a daily basis. And if you can read into your mind and know why you overreact and underreact or should have reacted, then you can pencil it all together and create patterns. And as a result of that, look when you're weak, look when you're strong, and play to your weaks and your strengths. And also as well, I think it's very important as well for all the males listening that a lot of you guys are probably going to be very well aware of what situations stress you out, but you will invite yourself into those situations anyway.
Go on.
And it's very, very important to know that you don't really need to go into those situations. And if you do, that you're going with a mindset of trying to train yourself. And I'm a firm believer in living with and not without. So say, for example, you've had a breakup or you've had a relationship issue and your way of dealing with it is blocking the person off social media. Well, that's trying to live without. But what's going to happen whenever you're on a night out and you accidentally bump into them and they're maybe with someone else, or you maybe bump into them and they say something to you? You're not prepared. And what can happen is all your energy that was dictated into blocking or trying to remove said individual has literally crumbled down in 1 minute. Mm. So if you can train yourself to learn to live with, not without, it's a great way to be. So unless it's an extreme stress, obviously, but I'm trying to obviously cover a lot of the guys here are probably going to be having relationship stuff or things like that. And the same thing goes with addictions. The same thing goes with, you know, you got to learn to live with, not without, because the circumstance is always going to be put in your face at one stage or another across the rest of your 50, 60, 70 years on the planet.
Hmm.
So you got to be able to prepare how to deal with it, not be able to freak out and react impulsively and crumble under pressure. So I'm big into, again, protecting my mind from things that it doesn't need to be involved with. I'm also big into putting myself into situations that for the first couple of times it's going to be uncomfortable, but then I'm going to realize that, right, okay, I've trained myself now to accommodate this.
Hmm.
And I think that that's very important because a lot of us go throughout our day-to-day living and react. And what happens is that we actually forget about the present and we think too far to the future and we think too far back. And we're living in a paralysis and we're not being productive enough. We're not being efficient enough. We're not being effective enough. We're not being loving enough. We're not being caring enough. The people that matter to us the most are not, you know, the most important people when they should be.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of this is caused by weak self-development. And you can develop your body all you want. You can develop your fitness all you want, but if your mind's not in the right place, and you're constantly going around with an identity that you have to be ripped to be accepted because you look at social media and Instagram too much, you're full of shit.
Yeah.
You got to realize that you're already good enough as you are, and as corny as it sounds, you got to fucking love yourself.
Dude, I'm 100% with you. I'm all for the mindset. And I read a great quote recently which said, "Comparison is the thief of all joy." And I just fucking love that because, you know, we live in an age where social media And we are really going off tangent, but it's great. It's great that you're a deep thinker.
It's all very important because, you know, the diabetic man, the normal man's going to be suffering from the same things. And if anything, the diabetic man's going to have a lot more stresses to contend with, because always remember, your physiology becomes your psychology. How do you feel when you have a cold or an infection? You feel like shit.
Yeah.
How do you feel when you've got uncontrolled diabetes? You will feel like even more shit, and you open yourself to more shit. So it's very important that you have the mindset as well to also click on to the fact, right, I've got diabetes, I'm uncontrolled at the moment, my blood sugar's high, and I'm not probably going to be thinking the best, and vice versa if you were low. So, you know, a high blood glucose, if I could resemble it, feels like how you feel on Christmas Day times about 3 or 4.
Right.
In terms of fatigue, right, brain fog, sluggishness, you try to feel like that and try to have a good quality relationship, good quality business relationship, good quality training session, the ability to be motivated to do things can be quite a challenge at times.
Sure.
The same goes for low blood glucose. You know, how do you feel like you haven't eaten all day and you've done too much work? Again, it's all that kind of stuff. So, you know, a mindset is, it's such an important thing. And like, you know, mindset to me has only really come to me in the last 3 to 4 years. I mean, I'm only just turned 29. So, and I had a very, again, I didn't talk about it at the start, but it was involved heavily in competitive bodybuilding from a very young age. And I did extremely, extremely well from 18, 19 years of age, and competed all over the world and was sponsored by, you know, BSN and, you know, traveled and all of this stuff that I was able to do was told it was not possible because of diabetes. And again, this probably links back into mindset, but diabetes was a massive problem. It was an adversity. But I used that adversity to motivate me to go to university. That made me learn and obsess over nutrition and my health, which in turn allowed me to become a key educator in the fitness industry, speak all over the world at exhibitions all over the world, help thousands and thousands of people transform the quality of their lives, get leaner, look better, feel better, and then contribute and write a book on diabetes to help people with the condition. And I can remember the way I wrote this book was, I remember I was desperate for information. I was desperate for information on muscle building and fat loss. I could never find it. And you know what? I just went, fuck it, I'm going to write this.
Yeah.
And I had the academic background. I had the support network of all the professional individuals. I had the experience. I had the mistakes. I had everything there that I could collectively put into this resource. And, you know, the book now has sold just over 3,000 copies since the 28th of October, all over the world, Ethiopia, South Africa, Saudi Arabia, America, Ireland, you name it, England. And, you know, I'm working on the membership site now, and I'm doing this all myself, and I will be bringing in some, you know, proper professionals to help me facilitate that, because the demand for it and the need for it is there. And the information on diabetes and fitness and training is so sparse that it's basically non-existent.
Sure, sure.
And, you know, again, I'm very respectful of the evidence base. I don't say anything and dictate anything like a guru. I'm very appreciative of the evidence that's currently out there. I'm very appreciative of the science. And, you know, I want to bring high quality information to the table that's adaptable to individuals of different shapes, sizes, ages, and ethnicities.
Yeah.
So, you know, that is my motivation behind all this. And I, you know, for any of the diabetics listening, you know, that condition will never hold you back. It will only hold you back as much as you want it to.
Sure.
But it's up to you to take complete fucking ownership of your situation and to say, what is the best thing that I can control right now? I have never broken down and never been like, oh, fuck, I've got diabetes, fuck this is awful, blah, blah, blah. No. What is that going to achieve? What is that going to do? I've never used it as an excuse. And if you read my book, I never talked about having diabetes. I never talked about it. I never actually made a big deal about it. And the reason for that was because I didn't want to use that as an excuse. I didn't want to I used that as my form of acceptance, to put it in denial for a bit, not really talk about it. And it wasn't until I came off stage at an exhibition one year that I had a string of people that were queued up to talk to me. The 80% of them were diabetic.
Right.
In the first part of the 200 people queue. And they were asking about diabetes and building muscle and fitness. And somebody said to me, a few people said to me in the line, you should write a book. And I went, first person, nah, it's not really, it's too complicated. And going in to talk about really advanced disease, and it would just be too much. It would be a minefield. I couldn't do it legally. And, you know, it would, oh, there would just be too many things to do, and I wouldn't do it. Next person said it. Next person said it. Next person said it. You know what? Phil, you've got the skills. You've got the networks. You've got the knowledge. You've got the appreciation for evidence-based information. What are you doing? Do it. So I went ahead and I delivered, and it's paid off.
Brilliant.
You know, it's helping a lot of people. So,
well, you're gonna help a few more on the back of this podcast, buddy, and we'll.
Yeah, and I mean, there's a lot of guys listening that will be in a state of poor health, that will have potentially been diagnosed with diabetes type 2. Yeah. You have a choice, guys. You have a choice to either let that rule you or to let you rule it.
Okay.
And, you know, that's the main takeaway that I want you guys to take from this podcast. And we could have gone into a lot more detailed physiology, but I don't think that's necessary. But, you know, any diabetic that listens to this, this will be gold dust for them, because it will be giving them, one, the awareness that they can do whatever they want,
yep.
Two, the motivation to drive and do it, and three, the fact that there's now a community building of like-minded individuals yep. across the world to help with that and to share similar problems and goals.
Phil, I've got loads of questions I want to fire at you and give you some like almost like case study examples, but we veered off into mindset. Now, I'm very much into mindset. I've done a lot of self-development. I don't make any bones about it. My my desk over there in my office is full of books. One of the first ever mindset books I read, a lot of people rubbish it, was The Secret. And that introduced me to Bob Proctor, the motivational speaker. And 2 years ago, I flew to Arizona to see Bob perform at the Think and Grow Rich seminar. And over there, you work on stretching your mind. And I set some huge goals for 30-plus men's fitness. And since then, you know, we've got almost 10,000 guys in a global community. We've got 9 boot camp locations across the country. And we're growing at a rapid rate. And it all started by me sort of stretching my mind and realizing that actually anything is possible. It sounds really cheesy, but listen, I don't always talk about mindset with some guys, because that's fine, they're not on that page. But you've delved into that. You seem like a deep thinker as well. Tell us some of the books. Tell us what was the catalyst for you to get into the, you know, you're already in great shape, but to actually get into to the mindset stuff. And any what triggered you? What books have you read? Would you recommend?
Well, I mean, you can read books all day long, and the thing is with books is you're reading somebody else's problems and somebody else's experience, and reading books is great, and it does give you incentive to change, but the reality is you've got to go out and make a shitload of mistakes and fail a lot of times yourself before you realize who you are. So with that, on top of that as well, a big thing for me was accepting in life that, you know, your life isn't controlled by fate, and that learning to accept that life is a combination of beautiful challenges and amazing moments, and trying to amalgamate the two into how you should live. And that's living with a very open mind and the acceptance that life is like a river and it takes whatever path it goes. And there's always blessing and adversity. Something bad happens, it's just purely a direction and a channel to move towards something else. And the time in between that disruption is uncomfortable, but embrace that and know that that is the reason for change. And, you know, I could cite off 101 books, but one of the biggest books that changed my life was As a Man Thinketh by Jay Allen. Very small book, very easy to read. It's written in Old English, so some of you guys may not understand it, but it's an incredible book. Another very good book that I read recently, sounds a bit of a corny name, but it's called Jen Sincero, You're a Badass. Very, very powerful book. But, you know, again, it's down to discovery, man. It's down to how much you want to get out of life. And, you know, if you're just going to become part of the system and just wake up and go to work and come home and spend time with somebody and do that all again tomorrow and just live in a cycle and do that back and forth, you're not reaching your true potential. And, you know, the fact is that so many guys are held back by limiting beliefs or what other people will think about them.
Yeah.
You know, I struggled for a long time. I mean, I've been very successful in my career from 20, 22, 23 years of age, and I've done well, done incredibly well. And I could never accept when I was emerging as an individual why people wouldn't be supportive of that. A lot of people that were my friends didn't like to see me be successful, didn't like to see me grow as an individual. I could never understand it because I was doing a very fucking good job of helping people. Oh. And then I began to realize that they're only seeing in me what they don't see in themselves.
Yep.
And again, another filter that I use is everybody's trying to do their best. So when they look at you and they belittle you or try to bring you down or try to talk about something, people only do that to defend themselves.
Yeah, their own insecurities, right?
And I think when you begin to realize that, you don't react as much. And again, yes, some people will react spontaneously. And again, you just got to see it for what it is. But, you know, it's an environment too. Keeping yourself around a tightly controlled environment is important as well. Like, you know, look at your last dial numbers in your mobile phone. That's who you hang about with the most. And do any of those people resemble any of the qualities that you want to have in your life? These are hard questions to ask.
Yeah.
And again, and all, you know, life is down to the quality of questions you ask. Why am I behaving like this? Why? What do I see in this? Why do I want to do that? What did I learn from that? What could I do better? You know, if you're asking yourself those questions, you're going to come up with answers. And the thing is, I see so many guys read fucking self-development books
right.
and stuff like that. And they achieve fuck all. The impact, they don't have any impact. You know, you can read a book all day long, get ideas from it, but if you don't fucking act on that information, it's a pointless read.
Yep.
Yes, it may skew your thinking, and you know what? It may coax you to do something, but the reality is you got to take action.
Yeah.
And action, like, I mean, you know, we wake up, and I don't know about yourself, but as an entrepreneur, you know, you wake up and you want to have this perfect plan day, and you want to organize, you want to be so
like
fucking
that.
Productive and efficient and whatever. But you know what? Like, 9 times out of 10, it doesn't normally go like that.
No.
And you have to realize that your ability to take action and move forward with your life involves decisions and small little steps and connections every single day that are going to drive you forward.
Well,
so in my life, I have the filter of the following. I want to add value to someone or something, and that's going to have an impact. I want to connect with people. So I want to connect with somebody new. I want to connect with somebody that I haven't spoken to in a while or somebody that I love dearly. 3, I want to learn something new. 4, I want to prioritize my health, and I want to put me first. You have to put yourself first in order to help other people.
Yep.
You have to. So all of those things are like my filters and my go-to. And if I look at the end of my day and I go, have I added value?
Yep.
Have I connected?
Yep.
Have I looked after my health? Have I, you know, at least made a contribution to the world in some way, shape or form? Then I will be happy in my day.
Yep.
And it's very easy as an entrepreneur to go, oh, well, fuck, I haven't achieved this. I haven't completed the project. I get interrupted by such and such. I get interrupted. Yes, that's going to happen. But again, look at your principles. I live off principles and guidelines. I don't live off a plan. You have to be prepared to adjust your plan. You know, a plan is a rough guide.
Yeah.
Prepare to take a fucking detour.
Yeah.
That's what I say in my book. Same goes for your diabetes management. And, you know, this could probably be we could probably talk mindset and stuff on a separate podcast.
Yeah.
You know, you know, a plan for what? A plan, we talk about plan B. What if plan B doesn't work? What if plan C? Work off principles. So, you know, you've got to ask yourself, what are my principles for my body? What are my principles for my life? And when it comes to body, I'll break this very simply down. I've been retired now from bodybuilding since I was 24. When I won the seniors, and I competed. And my business was the main interest. And since I retired from bodybuilding, I went off plan. And I said, right, okay, I still want to be in great shape. I want to look good. I want to feel good. I want to fucking perform well. Okay, well, Phil, what do you need to do that? Well, I need to get good quality sleep. I need to be in line with my calorie intake. I need to be physically active during the day to keep my energy expenditure up. And I need to train frequently. Okay, Phil, what can you reasonably do in line with your new lifestyle? And my new lifestyle was to eat out a couple of times a week. enjoy time with my wife, not worry about prepping meals, to enjoy delicious food. So I said, right, okay, generally speaking, I want to have 3,000 calories. Out of those 3,000 calories, I'm going to have a good 50 to 60% of my diet from good quality food. I'm going to try to aim for 100, but you know what? If I want to go out and I want to have a good steak and a bottle of wine or a glass of wine and a dessert, you know what? I'm going to compensate and pull those calories in because it's the principles of energy balance that are going to allow me to maintain my weight.
Absolute gold.
Okay.
Yeah.
Secondly, on top of that, I want to make sure that I'm moving enough to keep my system churning. So I want to have a standard of 8,000 steps a day. And you know what? If I don't meet that, I can meet it on another day. And again, I never look at things accumulatively. I never look at things in isolation. I never look at things as in, right, you're going to fucking work just today on this. I look at it over a week. Your body, you don't gain fat by eating one meal. You don't gain fat by, you know, having one day under your step count. You gain fat accumulatively over time. And you've got to realize that you know, it's a multiple stage process. And if I am bad on one day, I can compensate another. If I go outside my calorie allowance by 1,000 calories,
pull it back the next day. Yeah.
6 days in a week that I can fucking rectify that. I can actually do a little bit more steps and just be intuitively in tune with what I'm doing. And I don't get me wrong, whenever it comes to a precision of a contest prep or something,
sure.
Got up a
different
little bit
story.
Real.
Yeah.
But you know, like I'm speaking again on body power this year. It'd be great to see all you guys come and hear, but using that as an accountability date to get back in shape.
You look pretty good, Phil, to be honest.
Yeah, I look okay, but I mean, you know, my standards are different to everyone.
Sure.
Think, guys, make sure you have standards about yourself.
Sure.
Standards is something that we actually should have talked about. But standards in terms of how you want to look, standards in terms of how you want to live your day, standards in terms of the people that you want to take to be with, standards of the kind of meals that you want to eat, standards of the performance that you bring to the gym, standards of how you treat other people, standards of how you want to be treated. And it's very important that you step up and you stand in the way of things that aren't in line with your standards. So as I said recently, when I quit the bodybuilding, I sort of regressed a little bit with my physique. When I say regressed a little bit, I was transitioning from extreme hardcore planning through to principles.
Sure.
And there was a lag period in that where I missed the all-out grit involved in bodybuilding. I missed the discipline. And even though I wasn't drifting out in bad shape or anything like that, you know, I realized that, okay, well, things were a little bit more like I was enjoying my life so much more. I had so much more freedom. But I think it's very good to have periods of intense discipline dispersed with principles too.
So
whether that's a stag do, whether that's a holiday, whether that's a wedding, whether that's a body power speaking event, whatever, it's nice to have those little kicks up the ass.
So what is the plan? Body power's coming. So get back on that track there. Go on.
So body power, basically I'll use that 13-week stint to get back to below 10% body fat, and I will use that to shoot up a number of images for articles and magazine features that I write for. So I'm using it as not only health accountability, I'm using it for personal accountability and business accountability. And you know, I can talk about so many different things, and I can get so many images when I'm lean, and I can talk about and for various different ebook projects that I'm working on at the moment. And you know, I put a lot of detail and precision into everything that I do.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is because I want somebody who, if I have a customer or a client or somebody that buys my book, I want them to be getting exceptional value from that product.
Yeah.
And you know, I have to teach from a place I've been authentically.
So Phil, where are you now in terms of body fat percentage? What sacrifices will you make? Will you stick to the flexible approach, or you were saying you were sort of doing 60% clean and, you know, 40% not so.
Yeah,
what's the
reality is it's about probably 100% clean the whole day, and then I dip whenever I want to, if I want to eat out or I want to have something. But to be honest, I don't really feel the need to. I'm on 2,900 calories, 10,000 steps, 10 minutes HIIT a day, and I train 5 days a week.
So you're doing, you're doing 10 minutes HIIT a day?
Yeah, on top of
Step. Just stop there, because this is really interesting, because we haven't spoke HIIT, and it's been interesting talking to a lot of the bodybuilders or the, you know, the physique competitors recently, and they're saying actually, everyone is on this step thing, which is great. You know, I'm addicted. I've got all my clients on it. It's all about the gamification. And actually, a lot of the people I've spoken to, the guys sort of similar sort of physiques to yours, have said that their bodies couldn't handle doing that amount of hit because of the inflammation, and they just wouldn't be able to give 100% to it. So tell us about the 10 minutes hit you're doing a day. What is
so
it?
The hits I basically will intersperse that between an assault bike and battle ropes or just some burpees. Whenever we talk about hit and we talk about burning out, what you're talking about there is central nervous system fatigue. And again, I link that back to the whole idea that fitness is meant to improve the quality of your life, not take away from it. When you look at the general members' public's perception of fitness, it's more is better. No, it's not about what more is better. It's about what you can adhere to. You do more is better, and you follow that approach with calories. You follow that approach with training. What's going to happen is you're going to burn the fuck out. When you burn the fuck out, your motivation goes, your immune system goes, your appetite goes, and you can't sustain it for fuck all. I'm swearing a lot today. I'm just lit.
It's all right, dude. Don't worry, dude.
I just get a little bit pumped about this
stuff.
It's
great, dude.
I see so many fucking guys and girls. I'm allowed to say girl to this?
Yeah, of course you can.
I see so many people approach training. I'm going to train twice a day, and I'm going to load myself up on caffeine and Monster to get there, and I'm going to keep doing that. And you know what? I'm going to binge the odd time because I break my cycle. And then I'm going to feel like shit and not sleep. And then going to catch a cold, but I'm still going to train. And you know what? I don't really enjoy this whole fitness thing because it's taken over my whole life. And then what happens is you meet someone and it all goes to shit. Or you try to go to do something else and you get injured. Or you miss out on a job opportunity because you're that fucked from your training. Or you miss out on a relationship opportunity because you had to get your fucking turkey and rice. or you can't relax in a social environment with friends and they end up excluding you and you become isolated because you didn't quite understand nutrition or training properly. Very simple filter for you guys, and I talk about it in the book. And like, you know, the book is suitable for people that aren't diabetic. Sure. Just ignore the stuff on diabetes, but it's very important that you understand exercise physiology and hormones like insulin, growth hormone, testosterone, whenever you're trying to build muscle. Very simple filter for you guys as well. I'm all about filters. It'd probably be worth extracting these and putting them out, but wake up in the morning, score yourself on a scale of 1 to 10 in terms of energy and mood. If you score between 5 and 1, you feel like shit, don't train. If you score between 5 and 7, train, but flirt with the weights. Boom. If you score between 7 and 10, train all out. Enjoy the fucking thing. You know what? Base your training off that. You know what? You wake up every day, you're scoring yourself subjectively. You're scoring yourself on your own biological feedback.
Yes.
You're scoring yourself on how you should fucking train.
Okay.
You're not going off a bit of paper that says, right, you get your strength day on Thursday, you get your fucking CrossFit day, but fuck that. You need to train intuitively. Train according to what your system tells you. Now, there's a big difference between being fucking lazy and training proactively. Okay? You know, training lazily is getting up and going, oh, fuck, I couldn't be bothered today. You know, you're not going to build a great physique doing that. But when you're motivated, sometimes willpower can override your biological senses. And you have to realize that willpower has a fuse. And when that fuse runs out, it's very hard to get back into it.
So you're rating yourself, depending on how you feel with a number, you're still doing your 10 minutes hit a day. So it's very short. Because I saw a video of you on YouTube recently and you were saying, you know, even though you're big into your weights, you really love that kind of gassy conditioning sort of flush out at the end. So every day, 5 days a week.
Yeah, I do that. But, you know, I'll tie that in. But again, when I feel like 10 minutes HIT on an assault bike isn't really extreme fatigue. But, you know, building it up to the point where you're doing it every day and it's interfering with your ability to think and actually be healthy is when you need to pull back and realize that pulling back is just as important as pushing forward. Pulling back is giving you recovery and adequate resources to actually move on. You can't keep pushing the pedal to the metal all the time. You got to look at, you know, whenever it comes to any form of training or it comes to any form of body composition goal, that you have to literally look at all the stresses that affect you: rest, poor quality food supply, viruses, immune dysfunction, illness, stress, perception of stress, fear, anxiety, injury, training too much. All of these factors are going to interfere with your ability to perform on a day-to-day basis.
Sure.
And it's very important to be mindful of those and pull back and pull on when needed.
Yeah. So you will mix up your HIIT, right? It might be one day burpees, it might be one day battle ropes or assault bike, or just depending on how you're feeling.
Yeah, I'll just mix it up again, depending on how I feel. But yeah, usually I go with personal preference, what I enjoy the most. Again, it links back to that, you know, fitness is meant to improve the quality of your life, not take away from it. Does that make sense?
Yep. So just to reiterate with this prep now for the body power, you're going to be 100% on it. You're going to be hitting your 8K steps a day. Lifting weights 5 days a week.
5 days a week, and sometimes I will push that to six. It all depends on how I feel and the recovery, but five is my minimum threshold. And then if I have five set in place, then I'm good to go.
And then you've got your HIIT at the end of each weight session, and weekends just...
Yeah, the weekends and stuff, I'll usually train on Saturday and Sunday. Right. I do go out for a glass of wine on Saturday night.
Of course.
I have that with a meal. I like eating out. I would eat out quite regularly with friends and also with my wife. And, you know, I enjoy the social aspect of getting ready, putting on good clothes and going out and sitting out in a restaurant and having good quality chat.
Yeah.
Again, that's where the company comes in. You know, you got to be around great company. You know, and if you're not around great company, then you're in trouble.
This is fantastic, Phil. We've been talking for an hour and 15. Are you good to go for another 15 minutes?
I actually have another call at 12:30.
Okay, so, right. We got 5 minutes. We got 5 minutes, dude. All right. So look, let's just look at this whole just very quickly. Type 2 diabetes, right? This is the where some of my clients could be heading. The busy over 30s, 40s, 50s men. Okay. How are they going to know if they are currently a risk factor for type 2 diabetes? What are they going to be experiencing? And how can they go about
You can go and get clinical testing, but again, ask yourself the question, how do I look and feel right now? Do you feel like shit? Do you look like shit? Well, if you are a couple stone overweight, you're inactive, you don't eat well, you stress too much, you're at risk of poor health. And the reality is one of the biggest markers of that is going to be cardiovascular disease, diabetes, or metabolic syndrome. They're all interconnected.
Yeah.
To a degree. So you got to take action there. And again, there's simple actions like we talked about. Physical activity, training frequency, rest, calorie intake, stress management. Cover those.
What about alcohol?
In terms of alcohol consumption, I mean, again, it depends what you're drinking. Again, it's a big part of your lifestyle, and socializing is a big part of your lifestyle. Bear in mind that if you do want to achieve an extreme goal, that you are going to have to put the brakes on somewhere.
Yeah.
And you are going to have to take the hit.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, again, we can delay gratification and include periodic outbursts if they're really needed, or social events like weddings, blah, 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 blah. But generally, every weekend, if you're consuming well in excess of 1,000 calories from alcohol, that's not going to be conducive to your goal. The 1,000 calories from alcohol, even though it may fit within your calorie guideline, is not going to fuel performance, not going to nourish your system, it's going to leave you hangover, going to increase your risk of falling over and injuring yourself, and also as well going to open the window for you being drunk and the ability for you to get smacked in the mouth and also consume calories that you don't need.
So if we're looking at 1,000 calories, guys, because I've started to look at the calories in certain beers and, you know, Guinness and things like that, so we're looking at about 5 pints. If you're overdoing, if you're having more than 5 pints of a weekend, right? It's not a lot, is it? A lot of my guys, we listen to this going, what? Just about 5 pints or 2 bottles of wine, what would you say?
It would be, it depends on the drink, but 1,000 calories could be consumed pretty easy.
Okay.
Again, people talk about like having, you know, low calorie fillers, like, I don't know, gin, vodka, whatever, but they get you drunk quicker. And when you get drunk quicker, you tend not to make the best of choices.
Yeah. Okay. One more thing before we wrap up, and you can tell us where we can find your book, Phil, okay? For non-diabetics, okay? Just want you to clear something else for us. We've always been told, I was told on various courses many years ago about the whole insulin, managing insulin. You don't want to spike insulin because, frankly, if you spike insulin, you'll get fat. What are your views on that?
Again, it boils down to dose and frequency.
Yeah.
You spike insulin up at one part of the day, but it's down for the rest of the day, then it's not really an issue.
No.
You spike insulin constantly all the time due to the fact that you're over-consuming calories above and beyond what you need, you're going to gain body fat. Dose and frequency of insulin spikes. So look at the food. Anytime you eat any food, carbohydrates spike it the most. Protein also spikes it. fat doesn't really spike it, bar the odd polyunsaturated fat. But the reality is calories will spike your energy intake, and you can gain fat independently of insulin. So again, look at your food consumption, dose and frequency of food consumption, the dose, the type of food, the amount that you take, and the frequency that you do that.
Boom. Okay, Phil, fantastic. The time is 12:26. Phil, I cannot thank you enough for coming on. One of the, well, if not the most passionate guy I've spoken to. I've got so much value from that. It's been a real pleasure talking to you. Before we wrap up, Phil, just tell the guys, where can they get your book from? What's the title? Tell us where my guys can go out and buy it right now.
Yeah, so the book can be bought at diabeticmuscleandfitness.com. If you leave a note, I will send you a signed copy. The book covers everything from mindset. I talk a lot about mindset. People are buying the book alone for the chapter on mindset. I talk a lot about nutrition. Again, the nutrition and training principles that are included in it are specific to everyone who wants to redesign their body, not just diabetics. If you are normal and you do not have diabetes or you're in a healthy state, you can buy the book and just ignore the bits on diabetes. If you are diabetic like myself, you will get an immense amount of lessons, experiences, and evidence-based information to make your training and muscle-building experiences a lot more easier. There's everything covered in the book, right through to medications, right through to supplements, you name it. So diabeticmuscleandfitness.com is where you can buy the book, or you can also get it on Amazon. And also as well, my main website, phil-graham.com, and I have my own podcast, Elite Muscle Radio, which primarily is focused for fitness professionals and personal trainers that want to advance their nutrition, education, and coaching philosophy and all those kinds of things. So yeah, that's where you can get me, bud.
Phil, sorry, guys, also Phil is also, he's very busy on Instagram. I think he was doing some Snapchatting as well, and he's also on Facebook. So guys, look, I've really enjoyed this. I hope you get some great value from it. We're going to wrap up now because I know Phil is a very busy man. He's got to go. And also, I'm off on holiday. I've not even packed yet. I can hear my Mrs. Hoover in the hallway outside and she's flapping, but I've told her I've needed to get this done. So Phil, once again, a big thank you to you, my friend, for coming on. We really appreciate having you. Guys, I'm going to wrap up here. Make sure you listen to us on Podomatic or iTunes and please leave a review. Phil Graham, thanks again, and this is Coach Treggs wishing you all a great day. Keep on trucking and enjoy the time with your family. Thanks, guys.